Hey, my name is David Curtis, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, we welcome former Sidewalk Slam and Run Kid Run frontman David Josiah Curtis to the podcast. David and the rest of Run Kid Run have been going live on the Run Kid Run Facebook page, performing songs, talking about the 10th anniversary of their debut record, and it's been a lot of fun. David talks about getting the attention of Tooth & Nail Records, when they were Sidewalk Slam, transitioning to Run Kid Run, and the second life that brought the band, as well as the future of his musical career and Run Kid Run. It's a fun conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's just start at the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in Southern Illinois, near close to St. Louis, St. Louis area. Yeah, and lived there for most of my life growing up, and then moved down to Nashville for a girl, and it worked out because we got married and had kids, and so yeah.
Nice. What got you into music?
I'm a pastor's kid, and so I grew up with music from the church, but it never really attracted me, honestly. It's just kind of like my dad played guitar and spoke, but it was just kind of there until about 16. And then 16, I kind of like discovered, I mean, I was like, whatever was put in front of me, I would listen to, but I just wasn't like this like music guy until like I discovered like this underground music scene. Honestly, it was Tooth & Nail Records that really brought me into music. It was like MXPX and Supertones and bands like that that really was just kind of my gateway drug into this whole underground music that I didn't even know really existed. And then when I got there, I was like, oh, and there's Rancid and NoFX and Green Day, and there's, I mean, I knew, you know, some of these bands, but it really just opened my eyes to just so much. So that's kind of really where 16, where it really picked up, and I became like a music follower and kind of just obsessed. Before that, it was just kind of whatever was thrown in front of me, you know, DC Talk, Carmen. I don't know if you are a group of church kid, but this is very churchy, non-cool words that I'm using right now.
yes it is. that's the world we deal in. It's great. Did you play an instrument before then?
No, I didn't play anything until I picked up the bass at 16. I played bass, and then we started our first band, Sidewalk Slam, at 17. And so I pretty much was like, okay, let's jump into this. It was kind of crazy because it was pretty quick. I was like 16, just, and I couldn't put it down though. Like it was just constantly being played. And thankfully my parents were, supporters. So that really went a long way. Whenever they're hearing bass upstairs and me just jumping around and going crazy before, like, you know, I really knew what I was doing. So
that's awesome. Was that out of necessity that you picked up bass, or was that like inspired by Mike from MXPX?
honestly, yeah, Mike, John Fortson. I loved John Fortson from Squad 5-0. Like, he was like if there was any like punk rock bass player at that time, and then Mike Dirnt now, like later on, kind of like I said, once I got like past the Christian bubble of what else was out there, I was like, oh, this is awesome, you know? And so I just really was inspired by their style of playing, but it was not out of necessity. It was because it wasn't like, hey, you want to be in a band? Well, I mean, maybe subconsciously, I was like, I want to be in a band, so I picked up the bass, which felt like the quickest instrument to get into a band with, only four strings. But honestly, I played bass first just because I was listening to all that music and I wanted to play. And then I was buddies with Matt, the drummer that still plays with me. And then, yeah, so kind of from there, I don't know if you want me to keep going in the story or not, but...
Well, you were friends with Matt, and Sidewalk Slam was your first band? Just kind of came together quickly?
Yeah, so Sidewalk Slam kind of came together real quickly. I mean, we were a band, I think we started in 98, which is me, I was 17, and we were just kind of all mutual friends and knew each other through different things. And the first night we jammed together, it was like, oh my gosh, it was just so fun because it was the first time for us to kind of like, oh, this could be something, you know. It really felt like, oh, whoa, like, you kind of know what you're doing, you kind of know what you're doing, I kind of know what I'm doing, like, we can make this work, this feels good. So it was really exciting. The next week, we were doing a birthday, like, the next weekend, we were doing a birthday show, doing covers, and then the weekend after that, we actually opened up for Squad 5-0, and wrote three original songs. So it was like, and that was because they were coming through town already, you know, and we were like, okay, let's see if we can hop on the show. And so we hopped on the show. And so, yeah, it was, I mean, it got tired. My goodness. I was a senior in high school, junior and senior in high school, whenever the band was just kind of starting up. And I was, I mean, that's all I thought about was in between the weeks was like, what's our weekend gig this time, you know, and just the pure excitement and adrenaline and joy of just getting to like go around Southern Illinois and play all these different little places. And so, yeah, we did a little demo, and Caleb Olson from Boothead Records heard that demo, wanted to sign us, and he signed us to we did one album with Boothead. Then you mean keep going?
I'm going to jump in because the Sidewalk Slam rumor is you guys were Rob Walker's backing band.
Yeah, that's so weird. I had no idea where that came from.
Okay.
I saw that. I've seen that on the internet too, and I'm like, what a weird thing to say. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I know Rob Walker just from knowing Keith and Nell, but I don't think I've ever met him. Yeah, I don't even know where that came from. That was kind of weird.
Okay, you don't know where that came from? Yeah, because it didn't seem like to me that the errors made sense, and it was like,
yeah, not at all.
Okay. It's like, okay, he was playing with these teenagers,
right? Exactly, as like a 13-year-old.
Yeah, that's hilarious. So, how did you guys end up with Tooth and Nail? I imagine that's something you wanted to pursue, being a fan.
Oh yeah. I mean, we actually, like, sitting in a demo, never heard anything. I was like, oh, okay, I guess it's not going to work out. But we, what year would it have been? 2000. It was Cornerstone 2000, which Cornerstone Music Festival was a huge ordeal to us being Illinois boys and just, like, kind of the festival in our backyard. And it was, we always thought it was the coolest Christian music festival there was. And so we were about to go on tour with a band called Calibre 13, and they had several slots that year at Cornerstone 2000. And I just asked, Joe and the guys and just said, hey, you know, since we're about to go on tour, would you let us play like three songs before your underground set? And he thankfully said yes. And so, which was just such a huge deal to us, you know. I mean, we were just kids and we loved Cornerstone. So it was like a nighttime underground stage, and we played three songs, and it just flew by, and it was just exciting and just a moment for sure. And anyways, Brandon Ebel came up, the president of Tooth & Nail, came up behind backstage, and he caught some of our set, and little did we know, he was asking people like, hey, who's this band? What are these guys? And we kept hearing throughout the festival that he was kind of asking about us, and yeah, but we were still with Boothead at the moment, so we had to kind of like work that out. But that's how we got signed, was Brandon saw us live at the festival, at Cornerstone Music Festival, and he signed us from there.
That's cool. What was Tooth & Nail like at that time? Because you guys were on the label at a transitional period between the 90s boom and what would be the later 2000s emo hardcore explosion.
Absolutely, yeah. It was different for sure. Like being a pop punk band. I mean, there was other pop punk bands that were like kind of getting signed and younger, but like definitely like our first tour was Goaty Hook and the Dingies. So Goaty Hook, Dingies, yeah, and Sidewalk Slam was our first tour. And so like Goaty Hook, Value Pack, Slick Shoes, some of those bands were like, you know, still around, but not maybe their prime. So you could tell like the pop punk scene was kind of going out whenever we were kind of coming on the scene a little bit. I mean, it was still there, but it was just not in its prime. The Furthest Things Forever, Dashboard, and that whole scene was just blowing up, you know. So it was, it was a little interesting, but I mean, we were just kind of, we were doing what we naturally did and just kind of kept with it. So yeah, it was different, but I mean, Brandon still had a heart for punk rock, obviously, and wanted to sign us. So yeah, that's, I hope that answers that question. So we did all three of our records, all three Sidewalk Slam records with the Blasting Room in Fort Collins, Colorado, which Blasting Room is Bill Stevenson and Stephen Egerton did our first. He worked on our first record before he moved to Oklahoma with his family. But we did all three records at the Blasting Room, which is the Descendants and all. And of that fame, Black Flag. So, yeah, I mean, punk rock legends. So, I mean, it's pretty incredible to just, like, hop into that. And, like, you know, we got to see that, like, all practice one time. Like, they were in the studio. We, like, sat there. We had our video cameras. We were just such little nerds. Just so stoked. You know, like, this is incredible. But yeah, I mean, we did all three records at the Blast Room, and that was such a great experience for us. First, you know, real studio, going to Colorado to, we actually did the first record in, oh my gosh, it's crazy. We did 19 songs in, I want to say like a week, 7 days, 8 days maybe, just like something that's never heard of, you know, nowadays. But,
yeah.
I mean, it just felt, it seemed like, okay, this is easy, we can do this. So, yeah.
What led you guys, after And We Drive, to decide, you guys changed your name in there, added a member, you switched to guitar, became Run Kid Run. What facilitated that change?
Yeah, great question, for sure. So really, from Sidewalk Slam, we knew we wanted to change our name, and we met with Brandon when we were up in Seattle touring around, and we said, we want a name change, we just kind of want like a different start. He really said, like, okay, well, if we're going to do like a different start, let's make it a different band. Let's rebrand it like a fresh start. So, we took down Sidewalk Slam off the website, didn't talk about it. And then all of a sudden, brand new band, Run Kid Run, and moved from bass to, electric, became a four piece. I mean, our sound definitely like became more polished. And that was never really intentional. It was kind of more just naturally the way we were going, the way we were writing. I mean, we were a little intentional with kind of like not doing the fast beat, but still like, it was a natural progression of how we were writing. And so it just kind of began, and then we changed producers. So like, and for that whole process, like I'll always praise Tooth & Nail. Like, there's plenty of things I can complain about Tooth & Nail, but the fact that Brandon really, like, whenever lots of pop punk bands were kind of, like, disappearing off the label and not coming back, you know? Lots of our friends' bands were kind of like, oh, and they're done, and they're done, and they're done, and they're done. He saw something in us to say, you know what? I believe in you guys as songwriters. Even though pop punk isn't really, like, selling, I still, like, and I think that also comes back to, like, him finding us. You know, there's something to, like, him seeing us at the festival and going, no, these are my guys. I think they've got something special. And so I'm incredibly thankful for that, because that just, like, boosted us to a whole second career where, you know, we probably would have just stopped or, you know, kicked around the Exile Extend for a little bit longer and then been done. But came back as Run Kid Run and just really was able to do a lot with that.
Yeah, you said you wanted to make the change. Were you just tired of the name and just with maturity or wanted something different?
Yeah, we never loved the name Sidewalk Slam. I mean, it's silly. And then the more we kind of like matured, even like in the sound and just growing up, it was like, can we get rid of this name? Can we just change it? And so that was the main driver at first, but then also it was like, once we decided on that, it's like, well, I mean, maybe we should. And then Brandon was really the idea of like, hey, let's just rebrand this. Let's make this a new thing. So the first thing was, let's change the name. Yes, that was the first decision. And then after that, kind of like it morphed into what it is now.
Surprise, I found my daylight in summer skies. Yeah, whoa. Colors came out in waves when I first saw your face shine through the spotlight. Fell that day.
If you're talking about from like, you know, the blasting room and doing records and like, and we drive, I think we did in maybe 2.5 weeks. So we ended up getting a little more time, but still like 2.5 weeks to do 12 songs. To James Paul Wisner, we were there for, I want to say, 6 weeks, 7 weeks to do 10 songs, you know, and just a totally different philosophy and process. Neither are wrong, I would say, but just a totally different style. And that was kind of the first time we ever got a producer to really pre-produce and speak into our songs. We did that like for like maybe a touch at the Blasting Room, but they kind of just like, they knew we were punk rock kids and doing our thing, and I said, all right, go. Oh, maybe do this instead. You know, very little, like, producing, like, really, like, hands-on and, like, nudging us. But James was very much, let's put this chorus here, or can we not do that a double chorus, or can we slow this down? And, I mean, totally, like, transformed us as a band and kind of helped shape us because, I mean, even This Is Who We Are, our first Run to the Run album, has a lot of, like, punk rock aggression, but I think we came in with even more. I think we came in with more because we had the Sidewalk Slam roots in us. So I think we probably even had, like, and he's like, pull it back, you know? And now when I'm listening back, I'm like, man, I wish you would have pulled this back even more, just because some of those songs, like, we always laugh about it, but it's like, I mean, he probably pulled us back, like, BPM-wise and slowed us down and kind of just, like, tamed us a little bit. But honestly, like, some of the songs probably could have been better if they were 10 BPM slower, you know, just in the overall, like,
right.
But we were still so, like, no, we're punk rock, we gotta go, you know, and so it was just, it was so, like, he was like, all right, I'm gonna let you be who you are, but I'm going to just take a little bit off the edge here. Let's bring it back a little bit, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome. You said it opened up doors. I mean, was it just where Tooth & Nail was positioned as they had kind of re-exploded into the mainstream market that you think helped propel the band along with, you know, this change in sound, mild change in sound?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I would say, like, yeah, the label was definitely and a whole new, like you said, like, and I don't know how much we realized that. Now I see it so much more when I look back at the history of Tooth & Nail. But I mean, they were, Jeremy Camp was blowing up, you know. I mean, Emery, Supertone, just like a kind of a whole new wave, not Supertones, but like a new wave of like, bands that are really blowing up, and
Under Oath,
Acid, Under Oath, yes, exactly. Yeah. That whole world, so that helped, obviously, you know. That, and when we were remarketed, I think Tucson definitely, like, that first album they really get behind. That I mean, their marketing definitely, like, leaned in heavy, and then they were they saw potential and saw some success from that. So because of that, like, Kathleen, and you know, of course you wish they would lean in more, but I think that's every artist on every label. So.
Your last record, the last Run Kid Run record, Patterns, was released in 2011. I'm a huge fan of that record. I think it's fantastic. What happened after that? Did you guys just quietly go on hiatus, decide to call it quits, or just a back burner thing?
Yeah, no, great question. Yeah, we never really, like, said it out loud, so no one really knew. It was like, they just kind of disappeared. Yeah, so 2011 finally came out with Patterns. That process took longer than we hoped, but it finally came out in November of 2011. Honestly, by that time we did like maybe 10 shows, or something, like, to support that record. But man, we're so like, yeah. I'm glad you liked the record. I'm thankful for that. Yeah, it was definitely one we're really proud of, and wish we could have seen, you know, what could have come up with that record. And me and my best bud, we always talk about that. He's like, do you think that record would have done better if you guys would have been on the road? I was like, I don't know. I don't know. It's always like, maybe, maybe. But, yeah, so pretty much, I was married at the time. Paul, our bass player, was about to get married or just was married. Matt got married not long after that. Neil got married. So, like, everybody kind of life happened. And so we all kind of slowed down. I ended up taking a part-time job with the church here in Nashville. And so all those things kind of just slowed us way down. And I think with that kind of put the brakes on. And it was just like there's more space in between the gigs. And then it was kind of like, all right, we're just going to put it on pause and never make any sort of like an official. I think that's on purpose because we always knew in the back of my head, at least I knew, like, I didn't want to make a big deal of like final tour, reunion shows, because I kind of always wanted, as an artist, I feel like I'm always like tinkering with something. You know, there's always some project that's in the corner going like, okay, yeah, I'm going to put out this or I'm going to do that or, you know, and so I always kind of wanted that in the back of my head of like, maybe we'll do some more songs or maybe, and we talked about it forever, like always in group text, like, hey, we should write. Yeah, we should write. But three of the guys, all the rest of the guys are in St. Louis and I'm in Nashville. So it makes it a little challenging. And then life in general is just like full, so full, you know, with kids. I've got two kids. Paul has one and one on the way. Adam's got a kid. So, yeah, it's just, it's full. So music sometimes kind of gets put on the back burner, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as I'm sure you've seen or know, but, like, we're kind of starting to talk about that, and we're we just announced on a live stream last week that we're going to do three songs. Three new songs, sometime in the near future. We don't know what, but we're excited to at least say it out loud to the world and say, "Hey, we're going to release at least an EP." So
that's awesome. That's
great. We're stoked.
You think that'll have a sound similar to Patterns or something different, or you don't know yet?
I have no idea. I've already written a couple things and sent to the guys just because I'm like. We've talked about like what the style is going to sound like and feel like, but I don't know. I'm writing very much in the vein. And like I said, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to end up happening by the time we get to like push record. But right now I'm kind of writing in the vein of like Back to the Basics, kind of that pop rock still style. Maybe even a little bit more Love at the Core. Maybe it's just because I'm, like, playing those songs a lot, like, online and doing stuff like that. So it's, like, it's got some of that, like, pop-punk aggression. Just because I kind of miss it a little bit. I miss a little bit of that feel. So, I honestly have no idea. The record could end up sounding so different. So we don't know. TBD.
That's fun. Well, since then, you've continued to release music under your own name. You have a bunch of records up on Bandcamp.
Yeah. I mean, kind of the same. It's just kind of, it's an outlet. I need to create. Like, I need to create because it helps me. It helps inspire me to just, like, it's an outlet I need to release. And so, honestly, came out with a full length in 2016. Goodness, which is almost 4 years ago this September. Now, called One Voice, which I'm really proud of. It's just kind of like a rock record with like worship lyrics and a worshipful lyrics, you know. So I'm a worship pastor, so it kind of makes sense how I write and what I write. But that, and I've got a couple other EPs and like other other records up there and stuff. Nothing really, like no sort of like big promotion. Like I'll go do worship to some places, play a show, like play two or three shows a year, like different clubs with my friends, or you know, it's mostly fun. That's what it's for. Which,
that's awesome.
Which is kind of like, it makes music more fun now. Like I was talking to the guys on the Facebook live stream we did last week, and I was like, I'm just excited to get into a room and play rock and roll. And like, whoever comes, that'll be a little bonus. But like, it's not that all this pressure of, is the single doing this, or why is Tooth and Nail not doing this, or the radio promotion or the tours. And now it's just back to what it used to be in 97 when we started.
Yeah.
It's just fun. You know, it's like four dudes making music together. And the fact that people still care is just a bonus. I can't believe, like, oh, people are interested. That's so fun. It's so nice of them. You know what I mean? So it's just, it brings that gratitude back to like, wow. And it just makes it more enjoyable. So I'm stoked to see where it goes.
Carry on to the grave, strength to engage the battle that rages. Carry on to the grave, strength to engage the battle that
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.